Awesome. So I'm going to move this. This is okay, right? So I don't like these that much. Awesome. So hi, everybody. I'm going to do some new stuff because we're part of this process, those of you who are not part of the group. We've been writing a lot and talking story and influencing each other, and so I couldn't not do a couple new things. So I'm going to start with one, and then the other ones are going to be older, and then it'll be new again. So some of you may, it doesn't matter because you've never heard any of them. So let me start with this and see if this works. Let's see if this works. Okay.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterworld.
The afternoon we found out you had gone. Oops. We were sitting at the I Hotel on Kearney Street, discussing poetry and memory and oral tradition, diaspora, Philippines, Guahan, Puerto Rico, Mexico, and how one can never go home again. The news came from Urayoan, who had just arrived fresh from the plane from New York. Prince died, he said, just after parking his roller bag. We all checked our phones. I even chuckled, thinking this must be a joke. You, seeming immortal already, could never die. Confirming that it was true, we looked at the tanduay which Barbara had gotten from our islands, the Philippines, and we poured one out for you. We toasted and drank the amber rum, the liquid hot in our throats, like a life lived, burning, like a song coating our throats and going down into our bellies. All day we sang you. Posted photos and memories of how you had impacted us as kids, as artists, as people, your sound, your gender, your defiance, your rock and roll, your soul. I thought about how sound is like life, how the moment of conception, of voicing, is relived each time we press play. Because sound vibrates in our ears, in the drums of our chests, just as it vibrated from your vocal cords, your belly, your body. So in this way, you live each time we hear you. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. So that's actually part one of two. So come to the other event tomorrow and you'll hear part two, probably. That's my promo. Yes, feel free to respond in however way, claps, snaps, whatever. So, so here's one that's older. It's in the book, but you know, I just to connect everything. I chose these because, for one, some of my writing is very. We were talking about this with Barbara. Was talking about persona and sort of the different masks that we wear as poets. And a lot of this, the book that came out 2 years ago. There's a lot of sort of other voices, and I decided to just choose personal poems. So this is something that you all are, the people in Cuentujan and you all here have been helping me kind of dive back into. So I'm picking a few. This one, now that I've said that, this one isn't as personal, but it will be after that. I'm just giving you a heads up. Okay. And even though it is in fashion to be mixed race and or ethnically ambiguous and or kinky haired and light skinned and or dark skinned and straight locked and or with an unidentifiable accent and or checking the box that says decline to state. I've been called Pocahontas by a little white kid. Now let me estimate, 29 times asked if I'm Native American and 23 times Tibetan or Indian and 19 times Hawaiian. Now let me almost forget the times I was asked almost accurately, but then there were the times I really wished I was those other things. That's the funny thing. And even though it's all about mango trees and banana leaves and avocado oil for healthy hair and skin and eating crabs with your fingers pre-Spanish fork and spoon and pre-KFC chicken you can be fed by dancing feathered natives, that is true, it all tastes good, but really there's also The glue-sniffing children with no shirts, hawking towels, cross-cut with 12-year-old strippers, beer-bellied white men gawking, cross-cut with proper English-speaking businessmen with Spanish names, wives applying bleached skin products sold on every counter is not very romantic, I assure you. Thank you. So I guess that's personal, but not at the same time. This one is one I never read from this part of the book. And it's called Scissor Cut. And so I'm wanting to write more about my father. And so I've talked about, he's a doctor, and his story is something that I've written about, but I'm gonna write more about. And so there's a few that you'll notice kind of digging in. This is called Scissor Cut, and it takes place in the desert of Washington, the deserty dry part of Washington State, if anyone knows what that is. Tri-Cities. At the big house on 53rd Avenue, at the top of the hill, in front of the desert where everything died, Joy and I were hanging out. She was in the big bathroom with the skylight at the end of the hall when I heard her cry. Suddenly feeling like the grown-up, I rushed towards her. Why was she playing with scissors? What was she trying to cut? And more importantly, why did I give these scissors to another 8-year-old? For these were not the normal kind, but the so sharp, pointed surgical scissors brought home by Dad from Our Lady of Lourdes. I always complained that we didn't have normal scissors in the mug in the kitchen with the pencils and the clicky pens like normal families did. And why at dinner time, Dad would be sitting in the living room watching surgical tapes on Betamax. Betamax. And I'd catch someone's stomach opened up, yellow and shining with blood and saline, wishing we could switch to Nickelodeon or the Care Bears or Pee Wee Herman. But there were many things we did that weren't normal, like putting out the sili and the jufran, not ketchup, to sop up with fried bangus and never bread or salt, but rice and soy sauce, or how I'd pronounce war, or prepare to hear arai if Dad stubbed a toe or got pricked with a fishbone, never ouch. Or how I never had grandparents around, just the excited tone in my mom's dialect, salty and oceanic, on a long distance call before she returned to say, Amy, it's your Lola. Joy faced the toilet, nursing her finger. The underside was unbearably yellow against the deep brown of the top of her hand. It had been nicked, and the blood bubbled into a perfect orb, like a world contained. It was almost beautiful. I stared for a long moment before I got responsible going to mom for a Band-Aid. Joy's brows pinched together, her brown eyes bulging. She bit her lip, thinking her finger might fall off. Her thick braids closed with the little balls that reminded me of marbles, swung like pendulums. Joy, I chided, thinking I was so mature. Don't be such a baby. The end. The end. That was to my friend Joy Brax. I never got to see her after I moved from Washington. Dad and the Lychee Tree. So my dad, part of what I want to explore is like my dad has these very fragmented, almost poetic memories. We were talking a lot about repetition. A lot of the things I chose, the rest I chose have to do with memory. And which seems like something we're like not allowed to write about anymore, or it's cliche or something, but actually that's all there is. I mean, it's like everything. So the way that he tells stories, he like really didn't have a lot of words other than medical terms, except he would remember these fragments of things. So this is how I pieced it together. Dad and the Lychee Tree. Sometimes Dad freezes his hand into a fist. What do you brace so as not to break? 35 years ago, the quick escape, elope, hope of, hand rests on Bible as they name presidents, states. Later on duty for 17-hour shifts, he studies under the best of surgeons, 4 hearts and 2 aneurysms a day. Dream becomes. Windows grow dark as sob pulls away. What do you brace so as not to break? Father grasps the breath that lungs reject. A machine called BiPAP gives him air. Mom used to wake him in the fight of night. It was still, and so was my father's chest. He recalls the solitary lychee tree leans from the bagyo brewing and approaching cracking. Five-year-old dad, reed in the snap of wind. Lolo Fructuoso's capacious arm. Shadow falls over the young limbs of the plant, promise of fruit. This is how the story goes. This is before the explosion sends Lolo down from the sky, leaving dad and five siblings fatherless, the curled fist of big brother, unwelcome substitute. It must have been the skinny lychee tree and the patriarchal leg, dad's shelter from a storm. What do you brace so as not to break? So as those of you part of the process, this is cool. The ones who are not part of the process are getting all this inside stuff. That's something that I'm going to explore that story a little bit more. And I'm going to share with you one that's called Untitled because it's so new. I wrote it, so I was at Split This Rock last weekend, which was this amazing social justice, social engaged poets festival that I recommend every 2 years. And I decided I was teaching a performance workshop, but then I was like, let me take a workshop, because I don't get to take workshops. And I took one with Samia Bashir, and she read this heartbreaking poem that just had me like completely falling apart, and then I wrote this. So she wrote a poem by Francine Harris, which I'm gonna share with other folks later. And this is just Untitled. So she had us talk about a journey, and I'm kind of reading this to learn how to write, what to do with it. I'm at my Lolo Jose's gravestone in Manila. That's my grandfather on my mother's side. But it's overgrown like those of his ancestors. He is in the place where dead soldiers go. I am at my Tito Jan's gravestone, also where the dead soldiers go. It is neglected and untended. We cannot find it, sunken into a swamp. I am at my own grave. Who is there to tend it? Where is it located? Tito Jan was killed in battle before I was born. I dreamed his poems and tried to give him life in a play. I tried to visit the dead on stage in a play. People witnessed me speaking to my ancestors on a stage in a play, and they wept, not because it was so well written, but because it was their own story being staged. I was witnessed speaking to the dead. I try to reconstruct the bodies of the dead. I try to speak across the immense void of time, history, and erasure, some self-induced. How do I drown out my own story in this void? There are secrets and there is shame. My father held a secret that everyone else already knew except him. Only he believed it was a secret. We all knew it was shame. It was also a momlessness and a dadlessness, and how he survived all that through holding on to his father's murder as a secret. I am haunted by that ghost. It lives beside me. This is not the ghost of my grandfather who was murdered by the lover of my grandmother. It is not my grandfather who fell from the sky on my father's fourth birthday. It is the ghost of the secret that was not a secret. I think it controls me sometimes. It tells me how to survive in ways that my father did. How a fatherlessness creates ghosts, the secret and the father who was fatherless. When we speak of the body being destroyed, I think about my father's father falling from the sky and how we scoop him up, this ghost body. And how my father became the son of ghosts. I think about all of our fallen fathers and our secrets, the ones we forget and the ones we cling to. That one's intense, and so is this one about to be happening. Okay, this is kind of a love poem. And it's also about memory, and it's also about a poem that I really love that you might be familiar with, This Room and Everything in It by Lee Young Lee. That poem breaks my heart every time I read it. So I'm actually using some found text from that poem. When I remember my dreams like life, I see moving stills, a film reel paused and released in slow motion. In those moments, I am flooded with senses. A gesture, your lips slightly open as if to say something, the flash of your hand gracing my thigh. There is a motion, like water, pushing through my hips, my whole self warm and compelled to sway. I know it is you because of your smell and a familiarity that boggles the number of minutes in the dream and in life that we have known each other. There is the light of the morning nudging my curtains open, both in the dream and in the room, and it keeps me alert and hopeful. I awaken knowing you are still there and fall into a deeper sleep. My sheets feel like water, my bed the warm bowl of a tropical sea, where I can lay my head back without fear of drowning. I can lift my feet and see the sun setting between them in my dream, turning the sky into orange and amber and gold. So rich and like God, my heart is breaking. And while that sun sets, the sun grows fuller through my curtain. A breeze sends a small tickle across my face. I see you there, breathing. I remember this, how I remember a dream. The photo of the boy on the raft preparing to enter the Emerald River under the cave where stalactites drip salty and gentle. I return to this place as you say, I like that one. How perfect the air of my motherland and the feeling of moisture in my hair filling my skin. Everything in this room is an artifact. I must dust each surface to keep it alive. When I hold a statue or gaze on a photo like this, I'm sent into times and places, these moving images. Perhaps I'm nostalgic, as I drink you in now as though I will not see you tomorrow. I want to remember this room and how we breathed inside it, how my dream was altered, even the photo, even that memory, the cave, the river, the wooden raft, my sheets, your scent, the sun filling my walls and my body. There is a quiet filled with joy. There is my hand on your belly. There is a thank you and goodbye waiting on my lips to be given as you exit this room and everything in it. Thank you. Thank you. I'm gonna close with this one, which some of you already heard, but I really wanna do it again. I think repetition is good, or I don't know, there's something about repetition, hopefully, for you all. But this one's just really kind of been speaking to me a lot lately, and it's about storytelling across generations. Those of you who have not heard this, I define three words: butiki, which is lizard. So you guys are gonna learn now. Those of you who heard it twice are gonna be like, I memorized the three words. Butanding, whale shark, and tutubi, dragonfly. And the other thing I tell people is that the dragonfly is born underwater and has gills before it climbs up slowly and develops wings. Pandakan is a place where, speaking of storytelling, where the Balagtasan form of poetic debate in the Philippines was created. Listen. We, butiki, slid bulbous bellies over smooth rocks. We, gentle butanding, turn the sea into milk. Now, Nestle carton bobs on the fetid waters of the Pasig. Open sewers gape like torn bellies. Children hunt for metal parts and plastic sacks. Pandakan birthed poets, but now it sits in the shadow of a fuel tank, ripe for disaster. Obtuse CEOs gaze down metallic towers, cursing shanty dwellers, clicking mahjong, kicking sipa, butchering pigs in the hell below. We, blood-stained tutubi, wings 30 feet span, could be seen drifting between storms and songs. We, 30,000 eyes, began with gills in the shallow edges of the river, could breathe underwater. I tell you this because the thing is happening, and you may look upon your cracked sheaths and see a thing that we were not. You may call yourself John, Susan, Kate, wear Old Navy, smile when someone thinks you look like Brad, Jennifer, Angelina. You may tip cowboy hats, sling guns on hips, shift the gears of German sports cars, but one day the game is up. The ones who gave you compliments regard your eyes, detect your bloodstained wings pressing through your skin. This is why it is important that you listen and remember. We were not jars of talcum powder, not master creams and syringe serums cramming drugstore aisles, not teenage strippers in red light districts with faraway looks waiting for the Americano to take us home. Not the Aita woman begging at the edge of the landfill where tiny methane fires light up the mountains of what the world has tossed away. We, Butiki, we, Butanding, we, Tutubi, could breathe underwater. Thank you.
And I hope everybody here can make it tomorrow night. We're going to be just down the street, Market and Goff, at the McCroskey Mattress Company on the loft on the third floor. There will be food and drink as part of the evening's performance, 7 p.m., so you're all invited. Please try and be there. Tell your hungry friends to come. I mean, there's even a category that no one has turned away for lack of fun, so, you know, dinner. Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. It's Filipino food, yeah. So thank you all. Beautiful readings tonight. And thank you all for being here. And I think we can linger a little bit in the space and, you know, hang out. Yeah, thank you.